Welcome to the Two Man Game, a coaching podcast brought to you by the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I am Matt Barnes. You can find me and all of my sports-related tweets and rants at @Matt_TwoManGame. I am joined, as always, by my co-host Chris Hines. You can find him on Twitter at SimplyHoops with a Z. And you can find his writing at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. When we talk about the Spurs, we talk about, I would say, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the New England Patriots of the NBA. They're just the, I would say, the classiest organization that the NBA has. So if we're talking about the Spurs and we're talking about the Clippers, it's just like apples and oranges, because the Clippers are just, I don't know, they're sort of dysfunction personified. I mean, you look at the Clippers and the way that they have kind of always been terrible prior to this run that I would say is attributed mostly to Chris Paul more than anyone else, the fact that they've had at least a moderate amount of success. And you have this team that has just been in the cellar for, I would say, decades. And it's really hard to sort of shake that personality of that team, that franchise that has just been awful for so many years. You know, you look at a team like the Cavaliers, and really they were in a very similar scenario, but you get a guy like LeBron James and all of a sudden it sort of changes your culture. But LeBron James is a once in a generation kind of guy. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like we could go on all night talking about the Clippers and we would still end up with a team that's probably going to be out come the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely agree. We need to go ahead and talk about the perfect team I was comparing them to, the Spurs.
Right? Yeah. So moving on to the San Antonio Spurs, a team that is just a well-oiled machine. You know, the players come and go. Tim Duncan spent almost 20 years with the same organization. He accounted for 5 titles, 6 trips to the finals, and he retires and goes off into the sunset. And what do you know? The Spurs are still right there at the top of the standings. They sit right now currently at 19-5. They are 13-1 on the road, which is just unbelievable. They've got Kawhi Leonard, who is one of the bright young stars in the league, probably the best perimeter defender in the NBA. And what do you think of all of this success? Is it surprising you? And how far do you see this team going? Can they realistically challenge Golden State?
I do. I can't say that I'm not surprised. Just the Spurs, who they are overall as an organization. You know, they don't depend on one player. That's why they're okay now that Tim Duncan left. Everywhere, from management to coaching to every person on the staff, just as a whole, they're just one of the best organizations in sports, you know, and you see it. You know, like you said, they lost one game on the road, which Doc really killed them about. But I do think that it'll be tough for them come playoff time, mainly because of Tony Parker. To me, he's looking really, really old this season, just with the back and forth injuries, and he's not even averaging over 10 points a game. He just looks really stiff. And I mean, at point guard, they do have Patty Mills, but he's such a great bench guy. You know, it's almost like his career was meant for him to be a bench player, but that's a good thing. Like Jamal Crawford, I don't think Jamal Crawford would be as good if he was a starter. Same with Patty Mills. He's made to kind of be that spark off the bench. But now that you have Tony Parker with so many injuries and he's just aging, it's time to get another point guard. You know, they really, truly need another point guard in there to run the show. That's definitely what they should be looking for in a draft this year with so many guards. Yeah, with Tony Parker aging, it's just hard to see them competing because Kawhi is going to need help defensively. You know, he can't run the show. He can't run point guard as well. So when they come up to play against the Warriors or even the Clippers, it's going to be tough for them to win 4 games out of 7.
Yes, I do agree with that, and I do feel like that the athleticism is going to pose a problem for them over the course of 7 games. But if you just look at what they've done, and the 13-1 on the road is really really, really impressive. And I mean, we think about the team that started, did they start 10-0, or was it more than 10-0 on the road? I know that they just recently lost to Chicago.
Yeah, it got to, they were 13-0 before that loss on the road.
Yeah, I mean, that is just, that is phenomenal. 13-0 on the road. I mean, their home record was, I think, just as surprising. They're only 6-4 at home, but I mean, they just really, really impressive from a team that is Kawhi Leonard and a bunch of other guys. You look at LaMarcus Aldridge and his points all the way down to 16.5 this year. And when he was in Portland, he was consistently a 20-10 guy. And we've got Pau Gasol, who he at times has looked really old to me as well. You know, talking about the whole thing with Tony Parker and them needing a point guard, what do you think of Deonta Murray, the rookie?
I like him. I do think that they could use a guy like him. He could, he has potential. I do think he has potential. As a unit, it's interesting to see because their offensive rating is 7th right now in the league, but on defense they're 11th. You know, and I think that, again, it's just all about that point guard position, you know, just not having that anchor, that on-floor coach that Popovich always has. You know, Tony Parker just seems a step slow, and Murray could, he has potential.
Yeah, he's only appeared in 11 games, and it's been very limited, but he's a guy that I think was, I think that he probably slipped a lot further in the draft than people thought. I think that San Antonio kind of got him to just sort of fall into their laps, much like they did a few years prior with Kyle Anderson. So, really, the point guard thing is a big area of concern. You're right. But I do think that there is a way that they could possibly get by that. And I think that if there is a team and there is a coach that is going to be able to figure out a way to maybe not, I mean, I don't think you could ever stop Golden State, but kind of just exploit their weaknesses more than anyone else, it's the Spurs and Greg Popovich. So I do think that they do have a chance when you look at if they are to meet Golden State. I feel like they will push them.
Yeah, I agree. We did see them, you know, dominate the Warriors on opening night. You know, and that's one thing that Popovich does. He really knows how to pick teams apart when it comes to coaching, and he knows that formula to beat the Warriors. You know, that game was just such an amazing coaching job. Every time the Warriors even looked like they were going on a run, he burned a timeout. You know, and he made sure to tell his guys, "Okay, we're rebounding. Nobody leak out. We're rebounding to stop them from running," which in turn gave the Spurs fast break points. You know, we saw them, you saw Jonathan Simmons just explode that game. And Popovich, one thing that keeps the Spurs in it all the time is Popovich's coaching ability.
Absolutely, yeah. He's really sort of impervious to being blown out just because he's such a smart guy. Now, they are only one game back in the loss column from Golden State. Do you see any way possible that they could possibly grab the one seed and that they end up with a better record than Golden State? Is that even a possibility?
I don't see it because the Warriors are so efficient. I was watching their game earlier tonight when they played the Pelicans, and Draymond Green got the rebound and he dribbled the ball up the left sideline. Kevin Durant came down and set a back screen for Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry catches it and three players are guarding him and Durant is wide open at the rim. It's just, you can't, when that team plays together as a unit and they play defense, you can't stop the Warriors. They just have too much scoring. You know, we saw Klay score 60 last week. And Durant, actually, the night they beat the Clippers by 20, all of their superstars, so to speak, were not playing well. Durant and Curry, I think, had under 25. You know, it was like a basic night for them. And they still
Kevin Durant had 14 points. He had 14 points in that game that they beat the
Exactly. So it's just when they can play that bad and still win by 20, it's terrifying, honestly. I don't think any team has a chance to beat them. They can only beat themselves. I have the Warriors win it all this year, to be honest.
Yeah, you don't think that Cleveland is going to give them any any kind of run, no trouble at all. They're just going to blow through them.
I do think that they'll kind of get through Cleveland pretty easier, much easier this year, because they the playoff run for the Warriors won't be as rough this season. And I think that the Cavaliers in turn will have a little more problem because the East has definitely improved. And a few of the Eastern Conference teams are still trying to figure things out. But I think come playoff time, they'll definitely be ready. And a team like the Hornets is not a team that LeBron and the Cavs want to see. You know, there isn't a player out there that can guard LeBron. But as a team, they can lose a few games. You know, last season in playoffs, I think they lost maybe like two or three games before the finals. So this year, I think it'll be at least five, you know, which in turn will give them a little more fatigue. And with the way the Warriors play when they play together, I don't see them losing.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see how you would come to that conclusion, because you do watch them and the basketball is just, it is just beautiful, and it is great to watch just from a purist standpoint and the love of the game and to really see offense at its highest order. But sometimes I watch them and I get a little bit upset. I just feel like it's not really fair to the rest of the league and the competitive balance. But I do think that Cleveland will give them run. I do think that Cleveland can beat them. I picked Cleveland before the season started. I can't come off of that. I've got to stick with the Cavaliers. So I think that they've got a chance to beat them. So really, I'm hoping that the Spurs can give them run and give them at least a competitive, interesting West Finals. I do have a ton of respect for what the Spurs do, for what Greg Popovich does. Such class and such discipline for the way that they play ball and the way that they do things as an organization. I really am marveling at the San Antonio Spurs and just how good they've been all of these years, really since Greg Popovich took over. It's been 20 years now. He took over in 97. So I'm really pulling for them to have as best a year as they can and give Golden State some run. But you never really know. That team in Oakland is a beast, and whoever is going to face them is going to have the tallest order when it comes to trying to knock them off their throne. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the segment that has become a staple on the two-man game. We are talking about the lockdown segment. The lockdown segment is where we look at three players from an X's and O's and coaching perspective, and we kind of just, I would say, inform the listeners the best way possible to guard the three guys that we select. And the three guys that we selected tonight are all point guards, all lead guards for their respective teams in the league. And we're going to be looking at Rajon Rondo, Kyrie Irving, and D'Angelo Russell from the Los Angeles Lakers. So, Chris, who is the guy you want to talk about first?
Definitely Rondo, because this one play is just stuck in my mind. The last game I saw him in, D-Wade passed it to him, and he caught it at the top of the key. He was at the three-point line, of course, and he pump fake. And I can't remember who the defender was, but he jumped. And I immediately started screaming at the TV, like, what are you doing? Like, Rondo is the last person I'm jumping at the three-point line. You know, don't get me wrong, his three-point shooting is decent, but it's nowhere near good enough for you to go flying by. You just don't need to do that. You know, Rondo, he hasn't been a real true scoring threat since his days with the Celtics. Since he's left that team, he's really sort of digressed. But the big thing with Rondo is his passing ability. So how a lot of teams and players guard him is they give him room. They feel like, oh, I don't have to play up on him because he can't shoot, which is honestly a bad idea because now he can see the floor more. And with him being able to pass so well, when you give him time and space to see the floor, it makes it a lot easier for him to drop dimes on you. You know, he's going to be able to get the ball to backdoor cutters and stuff because you give him so much space. I think with a guy like Rondo, you could just still play a little close to him. You know, don't give him that room and make it easy.
Okay. Yeah, for me, Rondo, we look at Rondo, And you're totally right about him, how he really has not. I mean, he did have a few years in Boston where he was scoring a fair amount of points. I mean, for a point guard, he averaged close to 14 points a few years in the 12-13 season. And in the 09-10 season, he averaged just under 14 points a game. Now, a lot of people have said that Rajon Rondo is like a little bit of an assist hunter, that he will sort of just dribble the air out of the ball until he finds a guy that he feels like he can either put in a catch and shoot or a like a catch and layup kind of situation. So he has averaged double-digit assists many, many times. Five seasons he's averaged double-digit assists. For me, if I'm guarding Rondo, I sort of take the in-between approach from what you're suggesting and the whole lay off of him entirely kind of deal. I would measure him, I would say, when I'm matched up directly against him. And what I mean when I say measure him is that I would just take my lead hand and I would just put it right in his face and kind of back off as much as I could and make sure that he can't see and that he's also not really going to shoot. You're right about him not being a threat at all from deep. He's a career 29% three-point shooter, which is awful for a point guard. So I would say measure him and kind of try to just limit his penetration. And once he put the ball on the floor, I would smother him and try to get it to the point where he's just moving the ball on offense and not assist hunting. So that would be what I would do with Rondo. I really feel like, I don't know, I feel like Rondo has fit a little bit better with the Bulls than a lot of people anticipated. Is that fair to say at this point?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the tricky things people forget about Rondo is how well he rebounds. You know, he's a really good rebounding point guard. You know, before Westbrook was getting triple-doubles, it was him. I remember the days when he would have 20 rebounds, you know, and he still sneaks and gets boards these days. So I think that's another part of guarding Rondo is when he does make that pass, you can't lose him because he's not a threat to score. He's still a threat to get a rebound and kick it out to a three, you know. So you really need to make sure you stick with him and box him out. Like, that's very important. You have to box him out almost like you would a center.
Absolutely. Yeah, you are right. He has averaged better than five rebounds for a majority of his career, and that is quite a high mark for a guy his size. Now, I think really when we talk about Rondo and we talk about stopping him and all of these things and what we would do to guard him, I sort of think that Rondo is a guy that almost stops himself. He really does kind of have the tendency to self-destruct. He has a tendency to sort of wear out his welcome everywhere that he goes. He rubs people the wrong way. A lot of people think that he's like a diva. So really, I'm not sure if you don't kind of take the approach with Rajon Rondo where you just sort of let him go off and kind of make him the offensive threat and see if that is going to do the trick, because he is sort of ineffective from a scoring standpoint. So maybe just trying to turn him into the biggest offensive threat possible, I think that that might be a way to go as well. I think that either way, though, Rajon Rondo, not really a guy that is on the first page of the scouting report anymore at this point in his career. He's getting a little bit older. He's been in the league now 10 years, and I just think that those days and his prime and stuff like that is behind him. He got his ring with the Celtics, but as far as him being that guy and sort of leading a team, I think those days are gone.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more. There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
I think with that, we sort of transition into a guy who has plenty of days in front of him of leading a team. Whether or not he'll ever lead a team deep into the playoffs, into the finals, that sort of remains to be seen. But we're talking about D'Angelo Russell now, the second-year guy out of Los Angeles with the Lakers, a guy that is steadily improving and an up-and-comer with that young Lakers roster. What do you do with D'Angelo Russell, Chris?
One thing I notice about D'Angelo Russell is he's a great shooter off the dribble. I won't say on the level of Steph Curry, but almost that way of Steph Curry, because he can kind of, you know, he has a little sauce to him. You know, he cross you up a little bit, freeze you, and then bam, he's sticking to three. You know, and he's really smart. He's good at using his body, finishing with contact. He does have he has had a few injuries. You know, we saw him sit out this season, and like, I really just appreciate the job that Luke Walton has done in letting him flourish. This season, we've been able to see him really, really grow into a much better guard. I think to guard Russell, you definitely have to force him to use that right hand a lot more, because a guy like James Harden, he's a lefty, but he's so crafty at getting back to his left hand. When I watch guys guard D'Angelo Russell, it's like he gets stuck when you send him to that right side. He almost always gives the ball up. He doesn't have that craftiness like Harden yet to get back to his left hand and attack the rim and finish. He's not there yet in his offensive game. But if you force him right, that really slows his game down a lot. It's almost like he stops to think about what to do next.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he is only in his second year, and he was a one-and-done guy, so he's got to be 20, 21 years old at this point. He is having a better year. You're absolutely right about that. He's averaging 15 points in just over 25 minutes. His field goal percentage isn't too high. He's right at 41%, but he is shooting just about 40% from downtown. So he is going to be a formidable guard in the league for many, many years. He's right under 5 assists. I think, watching the Lakers and watching what they like to do, he gets the ball a lot in the mid-post, and he is very, very effective when he is turning over either shoulder in that mid-range area. He's got a good touch. For me, if I'm on the opposing bench, I would really try to attack him the most when they involve him in high screen roles. So if he gets involved in any sort of high screen roles, I think that I would be inclined to blitz him, because more than likely the guy that is going to be setting that high screen is either Julius Randle or somebody like Timofey Mozgov or something like that, or even potentially Luol Deng. So if I am on the opposing bench and DJ or D'Angelo Russell is running a high screen roll, I will trap him. I'll blitz him right off of that screen and try to get him to move the ball and just make sure that my rotations are as on point as possible to just kind of make sure that he doesn't have the ball, because when he has the ball, he's proven to be a really effective scorer and just really, like you said, just a crafty guy. And one thing about D'Angelo Russell, I think that you even alluded to previously, is that he's clutch. You know, he is not afraid of the big moment. He will take the big shot, and I think he sort of almost relishes that big moment when the game is on the line and he wants the ball.
Yeah, I honestly really, really respect that about him, is that he's not afraid. You know, him only being a second-year player, he wants the ball in that moment, you know, and the Lakers need a guy like that. You know, they need a young guy who's, okay, give me the ball, it's my time, and I'll take over. You know, every team needs that alpha dog like that. And Clarkson is a perfect supporter. You know, he's perfect. You can't even call him Robin because sometimes he has great games. You know, oftentimes he has great games. You know, he's improved so much with his scoring. And that backcourt is, man, that's going to be scary. In about a year or two, they'll be a pretty scary team.
Right? Yeah, they had a great start to the year. They started out the first 15 games basically paying 500 ball. But they have sort of come back down to earth as of late, and they have fallen a few games under 500. But they're definitely going in the right direction with the Lakers and with D'Angelo Russell. They have so many young guys, young pieces, and if they continue this trend where they play slightly below 500 ball, they're going to end up in a scenario where they don't have necessarily a top 4 or 5 pick, but they're going to get another lottery pick, and they'll have another young guy to add to this mix. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that they've got somebody's pick that could possibly be coming to them at the end of this year based on a trade that they made. I don't know if it's Phoenix's pick, but they have a pick from somebody. I think that it could still be as a result of this whole Steve Nash thing, or maybe even the trade that the Suns made at the deadline last year. I think they've got quite a few picks, so the Lakers are definitely headed in the right direction. So moving on from D'Angelo Russell and to our last point guard of the lockdown segment, we're going to look at a guy who is quickly rising to the top of the point guard ranks, a guy that hit basically the shot that won the NBA Finals, a guy that is, I would say, for my money, the best handles in the NBA, an NBA champion. We're talking about Kyrie Irving from the Cleveland Cavaliers. What can you do, and is it even possible to stop Kyrie Irving? What do you do, Chris?
I think Kyrie is one of those players that you pretty much have to hope he has an off night, you know, because he can shoot from long range. He's perfect off the screen and roll. He knows how to split the defenders. He's a great passer. But the only way I noticed to get Kyrie kind of off his game is to force him to give up the ball early in the possession, because he gets really stagnant. He can stand still a whole possession. You know, he'll stand across the court and won't even think about going to get the ball. So you pretty much lose a defender for a whole possession. But once you force him to get out of the play a little bit, he kind of just drifts off and he'll stand there. You know, he's not one of the guys that really moves too well without the ball. You know, he likes to stand around. Some games he does a little bit of moving, but most of the time, if he's not in that, if the play isn't for him, he's one of those guys that'll kind of be disengaged a little. And that's when you kind of have to make sure you stand at passing lane so that when they do look for him, he's not there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's on a team with so many weapons. And at this point in LeBron's career, with the way that that team is constructed, he has sort of turned into a scorer and sort of a go-to guy for them. So I would think that Kyrie, he is most dangerous when he is scoring the basketball. So I would try as much as I could to turn him into a distributor. Now, whether that's being creative with any sort of like double teams or maybe even a fake double team, or running a second guy at him temporarily and just trying to get the ball out of his hands, I think turning him into a passer is probably the most effective thing that you can do, because if you look at him when he's really gets going, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's capable of scoring over 50 points, you know, and the Cavaliers, they do have quite a few weapons, but when you really look at it, you know, other than LeBron James, I would much rather have even a guy like Kevin Love or J.R. Smith or whoever it is that is on the floor with Kyrie Irving, I'd rather have one of those guys shooting the ball other than Kyrie. So I think that that is the best thing that you can do as far as being matched up with Kyrie Irving is trying to turn him into a guy who is going to set the table for others and not a guy who's going to look to get his own points.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a good way to slow him down. I didn't think about that one. It's interesting to see guys like that play with a guy like LeBron. You know, because before LeBron went back to Cleveland, Kyrie was so ball dominant. He just would always have the ball in his hands, and it was up to him. If he didn't score 50, they were losing. You know, he was pretty much by himself. And now it's interesting to see how he's adapted to that, to not having to be the only ball handler. And sometimes he's the primary ball handler, but he's not every possession. And I think that gives him a lot more energy, and, you know, he can work with a lot much more. So I don't know, man. I really don't know how you would stop Kyrie. Like, you really just have to hope he has one of those really disengaged nights, or you could definitely get him in foul trouble because he's so lazy defensively. He does a lot of bad reaching and doesn't really call for it a lot, but against a guy who's crafty like Harden, he'll definitely be in foul trouble.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely true. I think sometimes with a guy like Kyrie Irving, your best defense against him when it comes to stopping him is putting him on a guy who's going to take away his energy by making him play as hard as he can on the defensive side of the court. So, I mean, that's definitely something to think about. And really, you just brought up something that really just kind of resonates with me, how great LeBron James really is. And it's that prior to his arrival back in Cleveland, you look at Kyrie Irving and he was a completely different player. So LeBron James, he really does he changes players. And if that is not a mark of a guy who's a great player, I don't know what is, because he really has completely transformed Kyrie Irving and his game, I would say, pretty much from top to bottom.
Yeah, I definitely agree, man. Kyrie is a much different player now than he was before. And he just seems, even his basketball IQ raised just from playing with LeBron. So it's just, it's great to see a player like that, but they won't be winning the finals this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the thing of it is for the finals in that whole matchup is that it's just going to be even more interesting. And when we look back at certain eras in basketball, we look at the Kobe and Shaq Lakers, and then we look at Jordan's Bulls, and then you go all the way back to Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and stuff like that. And this really, the whole thing between Golden State and Cleveland, it really is shades of that whole Lakers-Celtics rivalry from the 80s, in that we're going to most likely have the same two teams for the third straight year back in the NBA Finals, which I don't think has happened since then, because it has been quite some time since it's been 3 years in a row with that same matchup. So it's really creating something that is historic with the league, and I think that it's nothing but good regardless of who wins, and I know that it's going to be a really tough series regardless of who wins.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's so great for the league, you know, just to have people may not like the super team, so to speak, that the Warriors have, but the fact that the Warriors and the Cavs will most likely meet in the finals again, I think that's great. You know, 3 years in a row, just so much competitiveness and just even the other small minor details, like when the Warriors played the Thunder, that was just such an exciting game. Like, it felt like a playoff game, but it was only maybe the, 10th, 11th game of the season. Like, I love where the NBA is going.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you look at it, and this is the kind of thing with these teams, with LeBron, with Golden State, with all this stuff that's going on. And if you've got a young kid, if you've got a son, if you've got a young NBA fan out there, this stuff with Golden State and Cleveland, this is the kind of stuff that the young NBA fan is going to remember for the rest of his life. If he continues to be a fan of the sport and a fan of hoop, he's really going to think about these matchups and this stuff and the greatness of LeBron and the greatness of the Warriors. This is the kind of thing that kids and the young fans out there are going to look at and remember probably for the rest of their life. So it really is a cool thing, and I think that we should appreciate it as much as we can while it's going on. Right, so that's going to do it. That does it for the lockdown segment. We tore apart the defensive construct and the coaching perspective of three of the point guards in the NBA. We really ran the gamut. I had a lot of fun. I hope that you did too, Chris.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Right, so that's it for the two-man game. Once again, I am Matt Barnes. You can find me on Twitter at @Matt_2ManGame. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Hines. You can find him on Twitter at @SimplyHoops. And you can find his writing at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. And that is going to do it for the two-man game. We will see all the listeners, or we will come to all the listeners. You will be hearing us very soon. And thank you for listening. We are out.
I've switched a lot of things in my life, but it's never worked out. I switched to being a vegetarian, but ate more bacon than ever. Every time I switch lines at the grocery store, I never pick the fast one. But one thing that totally worked out is I switched to Metro PCS and got a free Samsung Galaxy.
Make the right switch too. Move to Metro PCS and get a free Samsung Galaxy J7 with a huge 5.5-inch screen. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Plus sales tax. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details, terms, and conditions.